This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
This is News Radio 1070 WINA. I'm Coy Barefoot, and you're listening to Charlottesville Right Now. It's a great honor to welcome to this program Dahlia Lithwick, an editor at Slate and a columnist with Newsweek. It's good to see you. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
You must be absolutely slammed. I can only imagine that every media outlet in the world wants to talk to Dahlia Lithwick right now to get her reaction to President Obama's new Supreme Court nominee, and I am among them.
My six-year-old wants to talk about it too, so it's been a busy 24 hours.
What are the questions a six-year-old asks? Like, who is this person?
Why did the one judge on the Supreme Court quit his good job? Which is an excellent
question. Great question, yeah.
And actually, why did Obama pick a woman? So it's interesting. I mean, he's been, you know, I've been sort of saying for weeks now, because I've been thinking for weeks about this very fraught question of whether Obama should pick a woman and whether it matters and why it matters and how, as a feminist, can I say it matters? And I guess that's sort of leaching into my conversations with my kids, because my six-year-old thinks it matters now and wants to know why he thinks that.
You're shaping the minds of the future.
Not in a good way.
Dahlia Lithwick is in studio with us. So Sonia Sotomayor is President Obama's nominee now for the Supreme Court. Let's start with the obvious question. Who is this person?
Well, I think let's start with acknowledging this is a historic, historic moment. I mean, this is really a profound moment for not just Hispanics in America, not just women in America, but I think any American who has a story that's like hers, this amazing up from your bootstraps. She was born in a housing project in the shadow of Yankee Stadium. Her dad died when she was a little kid. She was effectively raised by a single mom who worked over hours at a methadone clinic to put her kids through school. I mean, this is a story. This is a real rags-to-riches story. One of the great bits of information that's come out about Judge Sotomayor is that her mom tracked down the only set of Encyclopedia Britannicas to be found in the neighborhood so her kids could have it. And this woman went on to graduate, Sotomayor, summa cum laude from Princeton on scholarship, went on to edit the Yale Law Review. This is somebody who was picked by the first President Bush to be on the district court in New York and then elevated to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals by President Clinton. She is just one of those truly Ayn Rand amazing success stories. And for a Hispanic woman, her parents were from Puerto Rico, didn't speak English, to achieve this kind of honor is truly, this is an epic moment.
We're talking with Dahlia Lithwick of Slate and Newsweek. It sounds a lot like the story of a president that we know. You see the similarities there.
It is, and a lot of people have noted that this is Obama doing exactly what Obama does best, which is pick somebody who really represents the arc of the American narrative, what is best about this country, the sort of hopeful, optimistic, sunny side of this country. And I think you're quite right. This story mirrors Obama's story. And one of the interesting inside baseball tales that I've heard in the last couple of days is that Obama, you know, went right to Monday night without having a pick. I mean, he had four or five people that he had interviewed. He was very, very familiar with most of the others. Diane Wood, who was on his shortlist, he's known for years. Elena Kagan, he's known for a long time. Sotomayor was not anybody's pick, only because everybody thought Obama was going to go with someone he knew really well. So she must have knocked his socks off when she met him last Thursday.
And what is it you think she does? I've heard in some of the press that she's very personable and outgoing. And do you think that that may have had something to do with it?
I think that her story, as you pointed out, really resonated with him. I think that he has been very clear in telegraphing that he wanted to pick somebody who got it, who knew what it was to be a real American, who understood how the law impacts real people. And even though, you know, she's a federal appeals court judge and he had sort of, I think, hoped to reach beyond the federal bench, Jennifer Granholm had been on the shortlist, Janet Napolitano had been on the shortlist. So I think there was a feeling that he was going to reach out beyond the federal bench. But I think at the end of the day, he looked at this woman who's been a prosecutor, a state prosecutor, sat on a bench, you know, was an actual trial court judge, and said, this woman kind of gets it. She has looked in the faces of real Americans for 20 years, and she understands how the law affects them. And I think that is exactly the quality he saw as lacking in the current Supreme Court.
And she doesn't have that country club background. I mean, she literally knows poverty.
She knows poverty. So does Clarence Thomas, in fairness.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I think that one of the interesting things about her story is it so closely mirrors Thomas's, right down to Yale Law School. This is the story of somebody who, against every odd, worked their fingers to the bone to make themselves a success. And I think in much the same way that we have to credit Clarence Thomas with that, we should be able to credit Sotomayor. Unfortunately, the blowback has already been from critics of Obama and now critics of Sotomayor. Oh, she's dumb. She's an affirmative action pick. He picked someone with a great life story rather than good judicial qualities. And I think it's a little piece of hypocrisy to want to give that as a credit to Clarence Thomas and then say it's something that detracts from Sotomayor.
We're talking with Dahlia Lithwick, a columnist with Newsweek and an editor at Slate.com, one of the keenest observers of the Supreme Court in America today. So your thoughts on that? The conservative / Republican opposition to this nominee started up instantly. And what's your take on that?
Well, they're in a tough spot. I do not envy the Republican senators on the Judiciary Committee, because there's almost no way you can attack Sotomayor's judicial record. She has almost 400 published opinions. Even the Wall Street Journal today had a big lead story saying, well within the mainstream of opinions. The White House is
not an extremist.
Oh, by no measure can you look at her opinions and say this is somebody who's imposing her own ideology on the courts, or, you know, going out of her way to push a certain view. You know, she is a liberal, no question. More often than not, her votes would align with the liberal judges on the court. But the White House put out an interesting talking point yesterday, which is if you compare her to any Republican on the federal bench that she sits on, 95% of the time, if there was a Republican sitting on the bench, she was voting with them. So to suggest that she's some kind of doctrinaire outside the mainstream ideologist simply is going to fall flat as an empirical matter. Her, you know, the casework that she's done shows somebody who's just pretty careful, pretty minimalist. She drills down. She's very exhaustive in her research. She decides as little as she needs to decide. She's very careful, very scrupulous about looking at the statute, looking at the precedent. This is just not somebody who's sort of a la, you know, Bill Brennan, hoping for an outcome and making the law conform to it. And so what you get instead, since you can't attack her record, is attacks on her story. And so then there's these endless stories about, oh, you know, she's just got a good narrative. The president has fallen in love with this rags to riches thing. She's not smart, said Pat Buchanan last night on TV. Charles Krauthammer said yesterday on Fox, oh, she clearly is going to privilege certain, you know, classes of people over others. So I think you're going to have a fight about identity politics. And why is that a tight place for Republicans? I don't think they want to have a fight about identity. I think that the worst thing that happened to the GOP was Sarah Palin talking about real Americans and suggesting that people who don't look like Joe the Plumber are somehow less American than the rest of us. So the notion that they're going to go after someone for being Hispanic or for being a woman at exactly the moment when those people are fleeing the party, it defies all logic.
We're talking with Dahlia Lithwick. Let's talk about on the other side of the aisle, the spin that the White House, as they presented this nominee to the nation, it was almost apologetic. It was almost like, she's not a liberal, she's a moderate. How do you explain that?
Well, I think they're being very careful. One of the things that Obama said when he introduced her yesterday, he could have been introducing John Roberts. He said, she doesn't make things up as she goes along. She carefully interprets the law, you know, sort of almost using the language of strict constructionism and text-based constitutionalism. It was funny because I was like, huh? Who's he introducing?
He was selling her to conservatives.
Yeah, well, certainly. I think that goes to this point, and you and I have talked about this a lot, that there is such a gaping hole where liberal judicial theory should be. Liberal constitutional thought is just playing catch up. It has been doing that for decades. I think that Nino Scalia's view of the world, of the Constitution, of originalism and strict constructionism and minimalism, all that stuff is so appealing. And I think progressives have done a pretty lousy job over the last couple of decades of selling their vision of the Constitution. Active, you know, liberty, says Justice Breyer. What's that? You know, living constitutionalism, said Justice Brennan. Well, what's that? And so I think a little bit of what you're hearing is the White House that's become captive to a legal worldview that has really only got one winning, prevailing viewpoint, and that is the conservatives.
We're talking with Dahlia Lithwick of Slate and Newsweek. So let's talk a little bit more about where she sort of fits into the ideological spectrum and how her presence on the court might or might not affect any of these decisions.
Well, I think the best way to frame it, Coy, is to say that liberals were really hoping that with this first pick, Obama was going to find the liberal answer to Scalia. You know, they were hoping for a liberal bomb thrower, somebody with a sort of visionary view of the Constitution, exactly what I was just talking about, somebody who could reclaim constitutionalism for the
left. And balance out the effect that Scalia has had on the court.
Scalia, followed by Thomas Roberts, Alito. I mean, this court, the right wing of the court is so strong and so powerful, not just in terms of youth and vigor, but because they are all playing from the same playbook. They're playing from a very clear post-Watergate Republican sort of Ed Meese playbook about what the conservatives want from the court. There's no analog on the left wing of the court. There's nothing on the left wing other than a bunch of very interesting, smart technocrats who decide one case at a time, and once in a while they get a little excited about one issue or another. But there's not that sense of unity, working together, all understanding what the goal is. And I think a lot of progressives had hoped and had said quite expressly, we want another Bill Brennan. We want another Thurgood Marshall. We want a vision, somebody to make liberal constitutional theory look good again. And whatever Sotomayor is, she's not that. We've got years and years of her writing suggesting this is not a woman who's writing for the ages. You know, this is not sizzling legal writing. When you read her, you see somebody who's technically very proficient, incredibly smart. As I said, someone very thorough and careful, but narrow and minimalist and humble. So, you know, I think it's an interesting moment, just as a philosophical moment, that Obama made that choice.
So she is not the progressives' Scalia by any means.
No, she's a lot closer, I think, to the progressives' David Souter, somebody, the person that she's replacing, someone who's careful and smart, but certainly not somebody who is going to reclaim the court for liberals. No, I don't think so.
Interesting. Now, how many other appointments might President Obama have, assuming that he is reelected for another term?
Well, I think that's a demographic question. I mean, ultimately, John Paul Stevens is 89. He's the sort of liberal lion on the court, the head of the liberal wing. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, as you know, was recently diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. So, you know, you're just asking, I think, a question that ultimately, you know, I can't answer, but I think certainly mere demographics suggest that in the next 7 years, he may have two more appointments.
Two more. So there is perhaps another opportunity for that he might give progressives what they really want, which is that anti-Scalia, that anti-Alito Thomas, more of a powerful force on the bench.
I think so. I mean, I think that one of the things that he has said over and over again about this particular pick was that he wanted somebody who had empathy, who got it about being a real American, who could sort of pull the court out of the monastery, the bubble that it lives in. That was important to him. That was much more important than soaring constitutional vision. And then the question is, as we go down the line, does that become more important to him? I sort of have joked, I think this pick was for America. This was for the amazing symbolic value of having a court that feels a little bit more like it's our court. I think the next pick may be for the court.
In meaning for the court, meaning more of a powerful force on the left.
I think so. I mean, it's hard to predict, and I think Obama is very, very savvy. As I said, this was a very smart and very savvy pick, not the safest pick. But I think he knew very well that it was going to force the Rush Limbaugh wing of the party to make a decision about how many more people it could alienate in the next couple of years.
So moving forward from here, what does the White House need to do, in your opinion, in terms of marketing this nominee, which is really what they're doing now. They're selling this nominee to the American public and in turn to the Judiciary Committee in the Senate. What do they need to do, you think?
That's a good question. I think they probably just need to stay the course. There's a filibuster-proof majority here. There's not, you know, Obama doesn't have a real fear of this nomination going south unless something hideous is discovered about Judge Sotomayor, and I'm guessing nothing will be discovered. So I think that they're going to have to respond to these critics that are coming right now from really the far right wing of the party. We haven't heard a lot of mainstream criticism of her, but these critics from the far right who are saying she's a crazy activist, she's a raging ideologue, she's way outside the mainstream.
Did Pat Buchanan really say she's dumb?
He said she is not smart. We're hearing a lot. In fact, one of the talking points that has been heard a lot in the last day about Sotomayor is that she's Obama's Harriet Myers. Which is just so profoundly unfair to say about somebody who's been on the appeals court for a decade. But I think they're trying to set this up as Obama made a pick that was a pick that had more to do with identity politics than the law, and they're going to try to take her out as that. As I said, the problem is she's got this rather spectacular legal resume followed up by a rather impressive, you know, years and years of cases to look at that suggest that she's nobody's Harriet Myers.
Right, right. So what do you think, wrapping up here, the timeline that we might be looking at in terms of a confirmation, is this going to drag out through the summer, or do you think this will happen rather quickly?
Well, I think Obama's pushing to have it happen before the August recess. Republicans had asked for 60 days, I think, to vet the nominee. I think they've got that now. So really the question is, and they're saying already, we're hearing Jeff Sessions saying, oh, I have a lot of problems with this. I'm going to have to look very hard. You know, so I think they're going to put up a good fight. You know, one of the things that's so interesting about judges in the judiciary is that this is an issue on which conservatives in this country have been very passionate and very organized for the last couple of decades. This is how we talk about gay marriage. This is how we talk about abortion. Liberals have never been as organized, as focused on the courts and the judiciary as conservatives have. So I think as other economic issues fall away, what's left to sort of rally the base is these issues of the judiciary. So it, as I said before, it puts them in a tough position because they need to be able to say to their base, we're still the GOP. We hate affirmative action. We don't like these minority picks who aren't qualified. You know, she's soft on gay marriage, even though there's no evidence of that. She's soft on abortion, no evidence of that. That's the kind of thing they're going to have to say in order to continue to be the party that cares about the judiciary.
To keep their base in line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think that that's a tough sell, as I said, A, because there's simply no evidence that she is wildly pro-choice. In fact, the three cases that I've seen that she decided that had anything to do with abortion, she sided with the pro-life side. But more poignantly, I think that she is just a candidate whose most of her background is in business cases, intellectual property cases, criminal cases. She's just not the sort of moral issues kind of judge that they can oppose.
Dahlia Lithwick is an editor at Slate.com and a columnist with Newsweek. Thank you so much for being here. I've enjoyed it.
My pleasure, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.